ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, big town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I am Branham, it is Brian behind the glass, and it is a Thursday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Hope you are all well. First team in the NFL that has kicked off, that's a football phrase, that has kicked off training camp, Houston Texans. They reported yesterday. Who's the dog here?
The entire 53.
Oh, there's more than that.
Okay, the entire 90.
Yeah. Are the Texans dogs? 713-780-3776. All
regardless,
of them,
they're going to swarm.
They will swarm. Yep. They will swarm. They will have that smart work ethic and relentless mindset all year. What's that?
Just like the Killer Bees.
Yeah.
They swarm.
Whenever people talk about the Killer Bees, they say they are smart, they have a high work ethic, and they have a relentless mindset. True. What's the difference between us and the Houston Texans? 713-780-3776. What are your most intriguing storylines for camp? What are the camp battles? Because I think there are a few. Mm-hmm. The camp battles that jump out to you the most when it pertains to Houston Texans training camp that officially began today.
Well, I think the most obvious ones to me are the corner opposite of Stingley, because you've got the two veterans that they signed in the offseason with Henderson and Okuda that are going to try and get in there. You got a rookie that, you know, in Lassiter that we've heard is going to be, you know, in the running to start at maybe two different corner positions. So I think that's where it starts. I think just as important is the left guard position because of the fact that, you know, Kenyon Green has to prove finally that he is, you know, able to live up to the billing of where he was drafted and do what they need him, quite honestly, to do. Those are the first two for me. And then, as we talked about earlier in the week, to me, it's that backup running back position and you know, kind of figuring out if there's anybody on the roster that's in the running for the, you know, is Pierce going to be a guy that can get back to what he did in the first year, or is it where they're going to have to look outside?
I don't think any of those three are position battles. Quite frankly, I don't. I think that
you don't think left guard could be with Green. It could be Scruggs. It could be Patterson. It could be
no. I think that Kenyon Green is being handed left guard one job. I think Juice Scruggs is your starting center. I don't think there's anybody pressing those two for starting jobs unless they're injured.
You think Lassiter's just the other corner, or
yeah, like just reading the tea leaves and seeing like where they're positioning them and all the stuff in training camp. Like Lassiter's been lining up outside even back since like the rookie minicamp, mm-hmm. Getting all the reps opposite of Stingley. I think that, and for better or worse, I'm not saying that it shouldn't be a position battle. I'm not saying that left guard shouldn't be a position battle. I would have liked a veteran left guard that was brought in that would press Kenyon Green for his job. Maybe not win the job, but press Kenyon Green. Maybe it brings the most out of him. And maybe they see something in Kenyon Green over the next 3 weeks where it's like, okay, we don't know if he can be left guard one. Let's go find the best veteran that's out on the market, whether it's whoever's left in free agency, and there ain't much, or if it's like a cut down from somebody else's 53, which every GM's going to be a player there. Texans were players there last year. It's how Kendrick Green got here. So maybe eventually. I don't think right now that either one of those positions is a battle. I think Kenyon Green, he's reported in great shape. He's a former first rounder. I think Kenyon Green's being anointed left guard number one. Same thing with Lassiter. I think they're going to give Lassiter every single chance, for better or worse, to be the second corner opposite of Derek Stingley. I think that the nickel spot is the battle that we should be watching when it comes to the secondary. Is it Desmond King, who was the heir apparent but was cut last year at the start of the season? Is it Miles Bryant, who they brought in from free agency that they knew, Casario knew back into his New England days? Is Jalen Petrie going to factor into the nickel spot? He was seen playing a little bit of nickel for the Houston Texans. Is he actually going to play there? And then what does that mean for the safety spot with Jimmy Ward back there, with Bullock, who you drafted, Eric Murray, MJ Stewart that you brought back? I think nickel is going to be a position battle. I think Lassiter, again, for better or worse, I think he's being handed that spot. And then when it comes to RB2, I think at some point you're right. I don't think it's current. Like, who is battling Damian Pierce for the second running back spot? Is it Dare? No. He's got a better chance to be your place kicker than your second running back. Jawar Jordan? He's a six-rounder. Like, do I think Jawar Jordan, a six-rounder, is going to unseat Damian Pierce, who had a strong rookie season, albeit a terrible sophomore season? I really don't. Not early. Maybe eventually, maybe like week six of the year, I don't think any of those three will be battles.
I think for the current at current present time, before they kind of get to the point what you're talking about, I'd like to see if it, you know, if there is a battle for the number two spot, if we, because those are questions to be answered. If Pierce can step up, if you know, a rookie sixth or seventh round pick can be in the mix. But I totally agree that, you know, by the end of camp, I think that the second running back is not on this team, as we discussed yesterday. So I think that that's something to be, only because you're going to identify, does either guy have the ability to push for to get that second spot, or it's just going to intensify, you know, Casario's need to go out and kind of scour what's going on with other camps and who might be cut free.
Yeah, I think that eventually that does happen. I just don't think there's anybody on the roster right now that is in line to battle Dameon Pierce for that RB2 spot. Now, I do think that there are some battles that are interesting to me. Now, like these story, like to me, the position battles are the storylines. Like, what are you going to see from CJ Stroud on 7-on-7? And Paul was out there, and Paul was kind of mocking it a little bit too. Like, these are football players doing football things on a football field on the very first day of training camp. But the battles that I think we do see, I think the offensive line is set. Unless there's injury. I think it's Tunsil, Green, Scruggs, Mason, Howard. I think it's set. You're tied in one set with Dalton Schultz. I think it's a huge battle on who's your second tight end, though. And I think that there is a third name we need to be mentioning here. I think Quentin Tarantino, Brevin Jordan, Kate Stover are all fighting for tight end two and tight end three. I think it's a position battle on the offensive side that you can monitor. Now, is that sexy? No, not really. Although I think a lot of people would be like, Kate Stover, Ohio State guy, he knows the quarterback of the team. He's going to be the number two. I could see him being the number four to start the year behind Brevin and behind Tarantino, who is kind of a blocking tight end that they seem to like. The backup receivers are going to be something to monitor. Is Skowronek going to make the team? Because I think there's going to be one veteran between Skowronek, Robert Woods, Noah Brown, if there's not an injury, that gets cut off this team. I think there's going to be a young receiver, Mechie Hutchinson, that unless there's an injury, is cut off this team. And I would say it's probably Hutchinson. So the wide receiver depth, huge battle. The tight end depth, I think a huge battle. I think that's all you really see on the offensive side. I don't think Hairston's going to battle with Beck as the starting fullback, et cetera, et cetera. And then on the defensive side, they have like 28 backup defensive ends. Like, who's going to step up and be the backups to Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter? I think that's something to watch. Same thing with, like, defensive tackle. Foley, Autry, depending on how much he plays there, and Settle or Locks, guarantees to be on the team. After that, it's kind of unknown. It's unknown who's going to be in that rotation there a little bit too. And then I think the fourth, fifth safety is something to monitor as well. But it shows you the signs, because I think those are the battles, that those are the signs of like a good, deep roster, which is the first time you can say that in a really long time for the Houston Texans.
Yeah, no, I think that's the excitement that should be in everybody's minds looking at what happens. And obviously there's extra excitement because it's the first day of camp. But as camp progresses, the fact is that, you know, it already shows that you've got a team of a certain caliber that I don't know that they've ever been at, where at least they haven't been at for quite a while, to where that's what makes it more interesting, because you know exactly what this team has and doesn't have, and that's going to make it more fun to kind of zero in on as we get closer to the end of camp. How do they solve the remaining couple of positions that we've been talking about?
Oh, there's definitely a handful of players that will make the 53 that aren't at Houston Texan training camp right now.
Yeah,
no doubt,
sure,
about it.
For sure.
Like, I would say between 3 to 5 players. And if there's more injuries, you just add on to that. Because there's some players out there that still are unsigned. Not many, but there's still some players out there that are unsigned that could be on your 2-deep roster. Not even your 53, your 2-deep roster.
I think there's some that we both like. I think there's names that we haven't discussed as much, and I think that there are names that we have. And I think that when you look at corner, when you look at the potential to find another linebacker, and to me, one that I think is something else to kind of keep an eye on is just safety, because of the fact that, you know, with what you have at safety, and if Ward can't stay healthy yet again, and you're looking at Petrie, and even if you're possibly looking at Petrie as a more versatile playing multiple positions, the only other guy that I really focus on, two guys been here last year and a rookie, I don't know why Justin Simmons isn't signed yet, but there's some safeties out there where I look and go, God, I mean, if you had him in the back of your defense, that'd be a hell of an ad.
Yeah, and maybe it requires an injury for the Texans to do something like that. Casario was talking today, and Casario loves to talk. He talked for 6 minutes without being asked a question today. 6 minutes right off the cuff. Like,
it's unbelievable.
It was he can ramble.
That's an SNL monologue.
And think about
this.
Like, he's talking for 6 minutes by himself, like unprovoked, no questions. And I mean, he talked about like the hurricane and the loss of Jacoby Jones. But Nick Caserio with an opening statement going several minutes is not something. It's something that happens a lot, quite frankly. Nick Caserio, he does all the big shows, McAfee, Jim Rome. He called into Jim Rome the other day, like without a request, because he likes Van Smack. He goes on with PP in the mornings every so often. He's like the first general manager, I think, in Houston Texans history that sits down weekly with their broadcasters. Nick Caserio likes the sound. Hey, you don't listen to that during the season? During the season, he has a weekly segment.
I thought you meant like he calls a meeting and has all the broadcasters in the room.
No, I think that would be pretty awesome. I mean, what other general manager in Houston Texans history, aside from Bill O'Brien, who was, you know, wearing two hats, sits down with the radio team and has a segment for Texans content each and every week? It's the first time in history. First time in every week, every game week.
I respect that.
He likes to hear himself talk, Nick Caserio. Quite frankly, he does.
Yeah, I respect that because I think that, you know, Daryl used to do the same thing with the just rambling on before I ever asked a question and things like that. But he would always make sure, and I appreciate that from a coaching staff, as I'm sure you would too. But when your coach, your head coach and your general manager make time to make sure you know what they're really trying to do or what's going through their practices, that helps a lot.
Yeah. It's never seen a football general manager do that. Chalupa says, doesn't Dana Brown do that? Dana Brown does do that. He's not a football general manager, so there's that caveat. What are the most intriguing battle storylines to you, Brian?
You guys named most of them. I'm very intrigued to see what happens at wide receiver behind the three guys we all know are going to get the most reps, and not even so much who's going to be wide receiver 4, wide receiver 5, but as to who the guys are that don't make the team, because I think there's going to be some names, especially if it's one of the younger guys that people seem to get attached to, or if they're cut, we're going to get the same treatment as when the Rockets would cut guys that were not going to contribute. Everyone cried out, oh my God, I can't believe you're cutting these key pieces that then go on to do nothing somewhere else. So that'll be interesting to follow. And the one thing that you guys didn't name is who's going to be the kick returner. I mean, especially with the new rules where there could be an added emphasis and in the kickoff actually leading to more yards and having more of an impact on the game. I mean, Damien Pierce would seem to be the favorite. He had a kickoff return for a touchdown last year. But it could be someone even bigger now that if they view it as something being more important. Could you see a Tank Dell back there? Could you see another wide receiver or corner back there? It'll be interesting to see who they choose to put at kick returner.
I hope not. I hope not. I hope it's not Tank Dell.
Agreed.
I hope it's not Tank Dell. Now, like another guy who would be mentioned there is like Steven Sims, but Steven Sims is going to have a very difficult time making this roster. If there's not like 3 injuries, how is Steven Sims making one of your top 6 receivers that you're carrying?
There's no way.
He's got no chance. The intriguing thing to me would be in that discussion is Cephas, a guy that they bring in from Detroit that is going to be a special teamer anyway. But is he a guy that pushes Noah Brown because he's had experience in the league and basically the reason why the Lions let him go was not football related, to where he could be a guy that could be versatile enough for them that they look at as a cheap guy that makes the roster as a sleeper?
I don't think there's any chance that Cephas is making the roster over Noah Brown. Like, Noah Brown was somebody that you went out and gave a significant contract to, worth up to $5 million with $3 million guaranteed, and the Cephas was probably a league minimum.
I'm almost positive he was a league minimum.
Yeah, this,
I mean,
to
Noah
me
Brown's
is a depth guy.
Number 4, right?
Number 4 receiver?
Yeah, I mean, I can't.
Unless he gets beat out by Mechie. Who they seem to
if
really
Mechie
like.
If Mechie takes a leap, Mechie could be the 4, yeah. But I don't see how Noah Brown doesn't make the roster.
It also depends on Brown's injury, because he was hurt in the playoffs.
True.
Like, is he somebody who's going to be completely 100% whenever the NFL season rolls around? And if he's like 90%, do you just go ahead and store him on the PUP for 4 weeks as a way to like, okay, we really like 7 receivers, and the way for us to keep 7 receivers is 6 make the roster, and then we can slide one of them onto the PUP for 4 to 6 weeks.
Right.
I think that you could try to manipulate the roster a little bit that way too. But I would say if everybody's 100%, yes, Noah Brown's your 4. I would say Mechie's your 5.
And then I would see Skoronic as the 6. They sent an asset out for him.
See, I think Skoronic is your designated 6 no matter who your 5
right.
is. Like if Mechie's your 5, if Woods is your 5, okay. But Skoronic's your 6. I think Skoronic's almost, I don't want to say a lock to make the roster, but
close,
I feel like he's
it.
Almost a lock to make the
I
roster.
I kind of think he is, but I'm curious, with you guys saying that, I just wonder if Woods isn't in the running to be the 4th receiver.
I think he's going to have to maybe show him something.
Fourth? I would say not fourth. I would say that his upside right now is five. I think Brown's ahead of him.
But again, like you said, but if Brown isn't ready right away,
yeah,
then Woods could be elevated.
Yeah, it would be between him and Mechie. Mm-hmm.
I think so too.
He could be in that conversation. I think that Woods, if everybody's healthy, gets cut. If everybody stays healthy.
I said he was. I thought he already would have been, but now maybe, you know, he's good out of debt. But I'm with you. I think Skronik's going to make this team, but I just don't know how much he's going to be involved in that much of the offense.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I think it's going to be like blocking type, right, special teams, maybe like your rare appearance at fullback. I think it's going to be kind of gimmicky.
Well, let's let him block teams instead of tank.
Yeah, absolutely. 713-780-3776. Busy show for you on a Thursday. Bad Take Boulevard coming up. Astros will restart their season tomorrow. J.J. Watt, is this whole thing for real? But when we come back, who do you feel more confident in? DeMeco is your head coach or C.J. Stroud is your quarterback? 713-780-ESPN. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN97.5, where the trolling has been poor so far. We're on YouTube at ESPN Houston. On Twitter, he's at Pac-Man Joel. Brian's at Sacked by BMAC. I'm at Jeremy Branham. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Cole on ESPN Houston, which is the superior streaming service we use, says that they better not have Tank Dell returning kicks. Easy way for him to get hurt. Hopefully they learned their lesson last year when he went down. No goal line runs and no kick return for Tank, or no goal line blocking. I was okay with him returning kicks last year. I was a rookie before he was like extremely valuable to the Texans offense, before he kind of emerged as the clear-cut number two receiver for the Houston Texans. I thought returning kicks was a fine way to get him on the field, use his skill, good at it. Going into this year, and really like halfway point of last year, Tank Dell, and you've talked about this, Tank Dell rules, do not return kicks. Do not have Tank Dell return kicks. He's too important to the offense.
Yeah, no, I completely agree, and you're right. We kicked this around a little bit last year. I've seen in the past, in the history of this league, that, you know, you see guys that have prominent roles in the offense, and somebody gets cued or thinks that it's so important that they have a return guy, and then he gets hurt, and sometimes severely, to where it can just derail everything. We saw it just blocking last year. After what we saw last year, I'm not putting him in any kind of compromised position other than when he's in the offense, because of the fact that he's just too valuable.
Yeah, too valuable. All right, 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Houston Texans coached by DeMeco Ryans. They're quarterbacked by C.J. Stroud. We're starting to see this is the time of year. Training camp has started for the Texans. It's about to start for everybody else. You're starting to see these quarterback lists, Killer Bees yesterday. You're starting to see these head coaching lists, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that Texans fans are extremely confident with their head coach and with their quarterback. DeMeco Ryans, great first year, wins the division. No one picked him to win the division, yet they do it. C.J. Stroud, one of the best rookie seasons that a quarterback has had in a very, very long time. A record-breaking rookie quarterback. I think that in the NFL, if you have that battery that's good, I think the rest of your team will be good. So the Texans, to me, have kind of checked both boxes. They have a really good head coach, a really good quarterback, and you can start to argue like where they rank, et cetera, et cetera. But who do you feel more confident in their respective roles? Do you feel more confident with DeMeco Ryans as the head coach of the Houston Texans or C.J. Stroud as the quarterback of the Houston Texans?
See, it's a good question because of the fact that the way I look at this is, and C.J. kind of talked about it, I think today, in terms of his progression as a quarterback, and I think his aspirations are to get to a point where, like Peyton Manning, like Aaron Rodgers, like guys that have just this supreme grasp of the offense, the playbook, and everything, that they almost become like a, you know, an offensive coordinator on the field. But I don't know that he's completely there yet. I think that the fact that both guys are so valuable to this organization, it's not a slap in the face no matter which way you go. The early indication is that DeMeco, even in his first year as a head coach, was able to kind of stabilize and do so much more than the last two guys we saw at the position that you already saw the value, and both guys have value. I just feel like there are other coaches that you can get to come in here that are going to be able to do DeMeco-like things. Not saying that DeMeco is bad at what he does. I just think CJ's the answer to this question because CJ's the guy that is going to even continue to get better. But what he was able to do his rookie year and how he affected everybody around him, I just feel like when you have that guy as the most important position on the football field, you got something that kind of bumps you up a notch. And I would say CJ.
What do you think is more important to a team, quarterback or head coach?
I think that you can find, especially with your coordinators, I'm going to say quarterback.
I'm with you. I think it's quarterback too. And not to like make DeMeco and Stroud, Belichick and Brady, but if you had to go back to the Patriot dynasty, which of the two are you picking? You're picking Brady.
Absolutely.
You're picking Brady. And I think both of them have the greatest resume for their role. I think Belichick's got the greatest head coaching resume in NFL history. I think Brady has the best quarterback resume in NFL history. If you give me in the peak of the Patriot dynasty an option of which two, if I'm Robert Kraft in the peak of that dynasty, you can only have one. Of course I'm picking Tom Brady over Belichick. Not to try to diminish that the head coach of an NFL football team is unimportant. It's not. It's critically important. I would say it's the second most important position in an NFL organization. But what's it second to? It's second to quarterback. And I also think that if you were to like rank DeMeco Ryans versus the rest of the NFL coaches, and we saw Cowherd's list yesterday, and where's DeMeco? Somewhere between 7 and 10. We look at C.J. Stroud and like where he's ranked. Where's C.J. Stroud ranked? Somewhere between like 5 and 10. So I would say even like the national folks that aren't as invested in local sports, Houston Texans, in this specific conversation, would also have Stroud slightly ahead of DeMeco relative to his position than DeMeco's position. So I would give Stroud a slight edge at the quarterback spot over DeMeco Ryans at the head coach spot.
I think the question, though, of what's more important to the team, a quarterback or the head coach, is not really the question we're asking here with who you're more confident in. So I get your point.
Well, if they're tied, I think it's the tiebreaker.
That would be fine as a tiebreaker, but who you're more confident in is not really the heart of the question when you say what's more important to a team, because I think we'd all definitely say quarterback, you know, slam dunk, don't think about a second longer. But specific to the question of who you're more confident in, I'm going to go with DeMeco. And the ranking thing that you brought up is a good point. But when I look at these two, I kind of answer the question with who has more room to grow, who has more mistakes in maturity to still gain in their career. And to me, it's C.J. Stroud. We saw him lose to Bryce Young. We saw him lose to I'm forgetting the Jabroni's Falcons quarterback last year. I'm forgetting
Marcus Mariota.
It wasn't Mariota.
It was the kid from Cincinnati.
Yeah, it was the kid from Cincinnati.
Oh, Desmond Ridder.
Desmond Ridder. Yep. So we saw these moments, and so you know, losing to Bryce Young, losing to Desmond Ridder, two games against the Ravens, they score zero touchdowns in those games combined. Stroud's amazing. I had him ranked as my fourth best quarterback in the league, but he's shown clear moments in spots in his career so far where it's like, okay, there's a spot where he's got to mature, he's got to get better, he's got to progress. Whereas DeMeco, not that he's perfect, not that he's 100%, but I think he's there. Like, I have no questions about DeMeco right now.
I have a problem with this, though. You're saying C.J. Stroud lost to those teams. Didn't the head coach lose to those teams?
Sure he did.
Zach Wilson terrorized the Houston Texans defense. Desmond Ridder terrorized the Houston Texans defense. Who is responsible for the Houston Texans defense?
That's a fair point, but like you said, quarterback's more important. The more important is the play.
Stop the other team's offense.
I know, but the play on the field, with the quarterback against Bryce Young, I mean, against the Falcons, he played well against the Falcons, but against the Panthers and the Ravens does absolutely nothing. It doesn't matter who the head coach is.
But I think you go to a baseball term about wins above replacement, and you look at it and say, if there was another head coach, but you still had C.J. Stroud, would you have a chance to win the football game? And I think the answer is yes. I think with this team, especially as it relates to last year going into this season, if you had you had DeMeco Ryans on the sidelines, but you needed another quarterback, I don't think they're even close.
I don't know how we could say that having gone through 20-plus years of mediocre to poor coaching. I mean, other than a brief couple-year window with Gary Kubiak, this franchise has dealt, and they've also dealt with tons of bad quarterbacks too. But we've dealt with such mediocre to below-average coaching that we can say, okay, any quarterback, doesn't matter who the coach is, they can win. It almost feels like you're saying then that the coach doesn't matter. And I know you don't think that, but when you say that, that's how it comes off to me.
It's which one matters less.
Yeah.
It's not,
okay.
Yeah.
And I also brought in coordinators.
If you have a solid coordinator, in this case a defensive coordinator, you have a guy that can run the defense as long as your quarterback is capable of running your offense. And look, I witnessed this firsthand when Rodgers was at his peak. He was calling all the offensive plays. The offensive coordinator was and the head coach were basically irrelevant. You had a good enough defensive coordinator to coach the defense, and essentially the head coach was minimized in terms of overall how valuable he was. So I think that because you still got to play the game on the field, you can have the best coach in the world. If you don't have a guy that has control of the offense, that can do the kind of things that an above average to top 10 quarterback in this league can do, I don't think it really matters all that much.
Let's take a look at the Texans' losses last year and see who was more responsible for the loss, DeMeco or C.J. Stroud. Also, who do you feel more confident in? DeMeco is the head coach, Stroud is the quarterback. 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Something I feel very confident in is Prodan Koops, because they make the highest quality basketball goals you will ever find. It's unlike anything you see in the big box stores. It's fantastic. They are great. They are better than all. Tempered glass backboard gives you that true, authentic feel that you find in the pro arenas, the gyms, college gyms. A breakaway rim, stainless steel hardware. It's height adjustable, and it's rust proof. You have to have the rust proof in Houston. We know that because of the humidity. But you can lower the goals anywhere from 5 feet. You can raise them anywhere to 10 feet. And with their new goal, Thor, you can raise and lower the goals with a drill. It's easy to do. It's fun to do. They call it their lightning adjust feature. The drill, you can get it from 5 feet to 10 feet in a matter of seconds. Also, their accessories, other than their lightning adjust feature on Thor, are next level. LED light kits for night play. It's hot in Houston, right? Spoiler alert. Well, get these LED light kits for night play, and you can play whenever the sun goes down. Backstop nets, pull pad lettering, lots more. You can order all that online. And another thing you can order online, professional installation. That's right. You don't have to do this. You don't have to work. You don't have to put this goal up. The pros from ProDunk will do it themselves, and they do it in the highest quality production that you will find. Perfect height, perfectly straight. You don't lift a finger. Let the pros do all the work for you. Give them a call at 281-351-9822, 281-351-9822, or visit them online, produnk.com, produnk.com.
You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Who do you feel more confident in? DeMeco is the head coach, Stroud as the quarterback. 713-780-3776. I hope Kyle Tucker feels better today on Twitter. He says both. Can't believe this is my life. A lot of people are just saying yes because they like both of them. Both equal. Yes, says Kenny. Cole on YouTube, QB1 is way more important than a head coach. I love DeMeco, but if he had Davis Mills back there still, the Texans would not have had the success they have. Point Joel Blank, period, is what Cole said. Also, this is a good question on the text line, 0365. How many games do the Texans win if David Culley was the coach last year? I mean, touche. Now, David Culley might be the worst coach in NFL history. So, like,
I know analytics has those things out there.
How do you still have David Culley on your computer there? That's
just
insane.
Because that quote is going to live in him.
He knows analytics.
Yep.
Him and Bagwell hanging out somewhere, trusting their eyes.
Hi, this is Jeff Bagwell. I love the Killer Bees.
I see that right, that he was lingering around SEC Media Day.
Culley?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. That's weird.
You mean hanging around unemployed?
Not unemployed enough that, and not lacking of importance enough that one of the other stations in town had him on.
3897 says DeMeco because he wasn't with Amber Rose. Amber Rose catching strays.
Secondly, all he did was give a ride home.
That's what the story is.
You calling conspiracy?
I'm not saying it'd be the worst lie of all time. Sure. I mean, I believe the story that, I mean, you can see C.J. Stroud even when they're walking out of Minute Maid Park, separating himself from her because he was trying to avoid
the accusations.
Well, you
know how he makes everybody better. He made her better too.
Huh?
After their interaction, she obviously elevated her game to the point where she was at the Republican National Convention as a speaker the other night. So again, it just goes to show what C.J. makes everybody around him better.
That's a weird.
I'm trying to connect the dots here.
I don't know. Come on.
I think that was a showing off knowledge thing there. I think you were flexing your
knowledge bank.
You have more Republican National Convention takes for sure.
I was shocked. I walked by the TV with the convention. I was like, wait a minute. Who is speaking right now?
Junior Bronco says that Culley's working for Vanderbilt. He's an alum. I don't know if that's true. He might be making it up.
That would make sense if he's an alum, though.
That would make sense as to why he would be there. But, okay, so he went with Cully as the coach. Like, Cully's the coach last year. How many games do you win? I still think they win, like, eight. Like, Cully won more games than Lovey.
I was going to say seven as well.
I was going to say seven.
Eight or nine? Like, the problem with Cully would be the culture. Like, D'Amico's culture was so good, et cetera, et cetera. Like, you know, Cully would need somebody to call the defensive plays, but he has Slowick. Like, Slowick's going to be his offensive coordinator. I think you probably lose a couple of games. I'll go eight, maybe three. Two so to that, three games, you win seven or eight games.
That was the key to me, was like, if he was hiring his own coaching staff as well, if you had Cully, that would be a different story than if you had Slowick and the rest of the coaches that D'Amico brought in.
Because I like the D'Amico staff a lot better. Now, let's ask the other question. Let's say that Stroud never played last year. Blake Griffin, rookie year, whatever, doesn't play. And Davis Mills is your quarterback. How many games do you win now?
Five.
That few.
Four or five, yeah.
Five.
So you just that should change
your
answer.
That doesn't prove my – no, that doesn't change anything.
I think it absolutely
does. That's a completely
does.
Different question, though, as we talked about in the last segment. That's what you're saying there with that demonstration is what position is more important to the team, which I never disagree with you guys that quarterback's more important. That's not the question, though. The question was, who are you more confident in? That's a completely different question.
Fair enough, but – you just went from D'Amico, who you're like uberly confident in, to maybe the worst NFL coach of all time, and you're saying it's a two-win delta.
I said three.
2-3-win delta versus going from C.J. Stroud to Davis Mills, and it's a five-win difference.
Because quarterback's more important, but that wasn't the question.
I don't know. I think you can factor it into the confidence. 713-780-ESPN. All right, so the Texans lose the Ravens game last year, week one. I don't really think you can blame either guy for that. Like, it was rookie. You might be able to blame Stroud, rookie quarterback.
Zero touchdowns. If you're going to blame one of them, I would put it on C.J. Yeah. The Texans led at half 7-6, and they scored zero touchdowns.
Well, and if D'Amico had anything to do with the defense at all, they did their job. Right?
Yeah, they were good. 265 yards allowed that game. We give Stroud the pass there because it was the first ever NFL game that he played. But of the two, like, who would be more responsible for the loss? I think it is fair to say Stroud there. Week two, they lost to the Colts 31-20. Offense had 389 yards. Defense surrendered 353.
That's D'Amico.
I think that one's D'Amico.
Mm-hmm. They lose to the Falcons in week five. They lost 21-19. Offense 313 yards, 249 through the air. The defense gave up 447 yards.
I know you're probably going to say D'Amico, but if the opponent scores 21 in your good offense, you should win the game. I would have
the ball because the Falcons just ran it up on you.
I would grade it a push, but I'm probably going to be outvoted and put that. I'm sure it's going to be put on D'Amico.
I wonder why you're saying it's a push there. They lose to Carolina.
They gave up 21 points and lost. You shouldn't lose when you give up 21.
They lose to Carolina coming out of the bye week 8, 15-13. Defense gave up 224 yards. Offense had 229 yards, through for 119.
I mean, it's Stroud.
That's no doubter. Yep. They lose to Jacksonville week 12, 24-21. Offense 352 yards, 261 through the air. Defense allowed 445 yards.
D'Amico.
That's on D'Amico.
Losing week 14 at the Jets, 30-6. Defense gave up 347 yards. Offense had 137, but Stroud was KO'd.
Wash.
Might have been KO'd the week before. How's that a wash?
Because they're both equally horrible.
Stroud was hurt.
Yeah, but he got hurt towards the end of the game.
No, he got hurt
D'Amico
against
Ryan should be able to shut down Zach Wilson.
Okay, absolutely. And CJ should be able to score at all.
He was concussed the week prior against Denver.
You're guessing, though.
It's an educated guess. It's a hypothesis. It's greater than a guess. It's greater than a guess.
You got inside sources?
I went back and watched the film and saw him wobbling around.
He did all of it.
Yeah, he was wobbling around.
Dr. Branham over here.
I will go back, find the tweet, and open it up to the audience and say, I might be concussed. Was C.J. Stroud concussed against Denver? All right, week 16, they lose to the Browns, 36-22. Offense, 250 yards, 178 through the air. The defense allowed 418 yards to a Joe Flacco-led Brown offense.
And Amari Cooper was a freaking hero.
He was. And D'Amico was reluctant to shade him
with Stingley. That's exactly right, which they changed. Did they not in the playoffs?
He did it one series in that game, and then whenever Nelson came back into the game, he went back to just keeping Stingley on one side of the field, and yes, they did change into the playoffs.
Yeah, it's on D'Amico.
And then final loss of the year to Baltimore, 213 yards, 175 through the air, and then the defense allowed 352 yards in a game they lost 34-10.
Brian?
Against Baltimore, I mean, again, you score zero touchdowns in the playoffs. I'm gonna put it on the offense.
Yeah, I'm gonna say a wash here.
Yeah, I'm gonna say a wash.
You surrender 34 points and give up 352 yards.
Yeah, but a lot of that was, I mean, you remember the flow of that game. That was not a game where the Ravens dominated on offense the entire way through. A lot of that was added on late, like late third quarter and fourth quarter, when the offense hadn't done anything, and all of a sudden the Ravens are running every play and running up and padding the score at the end. That was not a start to finish butt kicking.
Mm-hmm. CJ didn't have a full repertoire of guys to go to either.
Well, sure. I mean, that's completely fair. I mean, that was part of the conversation we've had, you know, early in the offseason before they added Diggs, and why they need to add guys like Diggs, because when Tank went out, it was Nico or nothing.
Cole says the BMAC needs to build a house on Bad Take Boulevard. It's coming up at 4:30 today.
Like somebody else we used to work with.
Are the Texans – okay, that's a silly take there.
I don't know if that proved your point, though.
No, I think it was about 50-50.
Yeah, that's okay. So
I think it was about 50-50. But in terms of like the confidence going forward, I think it's very tight. I really think it's very close. I don't think there's a wrong answer, to be frank.
It's to clarify, I don't say that as because I have no confidence in C.J. Stroud. Obviously, it should be well documented on the show that I love C.J. Stroud. But I just, of the two, to me, Stroud had more down moments than DeMeco. So I would slide in a confidence ranking. Confidence meter, I would side with DeMeco, but that is no slide on CJ Stroud.
I think there were some moments where DeMeco had some flaws.
No, I agree with you. The Indianapolis game 100% was on him. The Cleveland Browns game in the regular season 100% DeMeco. But you can point to just as many as we proved in this exercise that would be on the CJ Stroud side.
All right. Fun conversation. 713-780-ESPN. Speaking of the devil, where how can CJ Stroud be better in year two? 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Guys, look, now that a lot of you are getting your power back, you know that your air conditioning units probably need to be serviced. Maybe they went down or they're not operating and functioning the way you want them to. That's why I always tell you to go to Vanderford Air and VanderfordAir.com, because Vanderford's the best in the business at taking care of you and finding the one company that can give you the quality and the guarantees to make sure that everything from the installation or the repair of parts to a whole new system, they're going to get you exactly where you need to go. They're going to be honest with you and put things in writing, and they're going to make sure that you get your AC right where it needs to be. That also includes like a dehumidifier. If you haven't considered something like that, a dehumidifier can make a big difference, as well as your air conditioning, to make sure that the interior of your house is at the ultimate comfortable level for you and your family. Vanderford Air and Plumbing, they do it all, and you're never going to overpay. They take care of your AC. They take care of your plumbing. They take care of so much more. But the one thing that they really do to take care of you is they guarantee everything that they do. It starts with the fact that when you call them, you have a guarantee they're going to get back to you and be at your house within 24 hours. And then everything that I just mentioned, from the work that their workers do to the parts that they use to the whole systems that they install, it's all going to be guaranteed to make sure you're 100% satisfied or you get your money back. Check them out today, because they're the place that I tell you to do business with. Save this number in your phone as well, because it's going to be the number that saves your day if anything happens to your AC or your plumbing. 281-557-COOL, 281-557-COOL, or visit them online at VanderfordAir.com.
Live in the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees. Now back to Joel and Jeremy.
Honey Glaze Branham says, Branham, why didn't you tell us you had an Asian friend that went to Yale? Congrats to your friend. Cornell, and I don't have any friends. 713-780-3776. How can CJ Stroud be better in his second year? Here was a lot of people talk. There was the A-list of Houston Texans personalities that talked to the media today. Nick Caserio with a 6-minute opening statement. He doesn't believe in windows, but he believes in 6-minute opening statements. He talked for 25 minutes, didn't say much.
He believes in windows. Because you go, oh, he's still talking after all that hot air and wind.
It's not bad. Grade the joke. 713-780-3776. I thought it was like a 3-4. It took me a second. It took me a while to get there. I didn't know what you were saying. DeMeco talked. Always great to hear DeMeco. Stroud talked. Anderson talked. He's heavier, by the way.
Yes.
He's been living his best life.
Muscular, he says.
15 pounds he's added. And then Nico talked. But here was C.J. Stroud. How can Stroud be better in year two? C.J. Stroud was asked the question. Here's how C.J. Stroud answered said question.
owning the offense more, operation, putting more on my plate, with just like run checks, protection checks, things like that. And then really just like everything inside the field, you know, X's and O's can always be better. You can always have better footwork. I want to definitely attack the field, attack down the field more this year, and you know, press guys back, and you know, but also take what the defense gives me, and if it's a boring play, just stay with the boring stuff, and you know, just be efficient with that. So yeah, those are all things I can get better at, and you know, I hope to do that.
So that was Stroud. How he can better in year two? What would be your answer?
Yeah, I was going to say just with more familiarity and being more comfortable with the playbook, that he's going to be able to be more, he's going to be better. But I think the big thing to me is just not to the extent that we used to talk about this with Deshaun Watson, but the fact that when you just take your lump sometimes, take what the defense gives you. If there's a, you know, don't extend plays too long, and sometimes make sure that you just get down or get rid of it and save, you know, live to play another day instead of kind of trying to be heroic and then lose 9, 10, 11 yards and set your offense back a little bit.
Yeah, see, I think he was good at taking the easy play. Like, he brought it up here, and I thought that was one of his strengths, was that he doesn't force it a whole lot. He takes care of the football. Like, he led the league last year in attempts per interception, like, or his throws, the percentage of times he was intercepted on the throws, like 1%, which led the league, was best in the NFL. So that's an area that I actually think he's good at.
I recall in the Ravens game in particular, too, there were a couple times.
Week one the final game?
I want to say it was in the final game, where there were a couple times where I thought that he could have just either unload, you know, just got down or unloaded it. And it's the playoffs, I get it. But if you're trying to, you know, hang out and make a bigger play, and then suddenly you take a significant loss.
Yeah, I think that game, a bit of an anomaly, because it's like, okay, we're struggling offensively, kind of desperate, need to get it going. But I see your point there. He even talked about it, like he kind of contradicted himself. He's like, I want to be able to take the easy play, but he also was like, I want to be able to press the ball a little bit more and push it upfield. So it's like he's just kind of rambling about a bunch of random things.
He pushed the ball upfield quite a bit last year. I mean, his yards per game, his average, I mean, especially the Nico, his average, you know, depth per target was way up there. So I don't think
depth per target? Who's dying at these games?
Depth per target. Yeah, a dot, as the fantasy nerds would say. But yeah, I that was all there last year. I don't think pushing the ball down the field was something he struggled with.
Yeah. See, I don't think so, but I don't think he struggled with the easy play either.
I don't either.
Like, I thought that was one of his strengths. And you go back and, like, Watson, I thought it was one of his weaknesses, where he would make the highlight play,
right,
but then he would struggle on a check down on third and three, where if you just complete the pass, you move the chains. And it was that fluidity that you didn't see offensively when Deshaun Watson was here. It was kind of choppy. Like, you would have these great drives, and then they would go three and out on three straight possessions, and it's like, my goodness, be a little consistent. I thought Stroud's consistency was there, with the exception, he's a rookie, in some of these games where he just could never get anything going. For me, I think it's more, and not that he lacked confidence, but to me it's like having the confidence that when you're on the field, you are the best player on the football field. I think it's something that Pat Mahomes has. Pat Mahomes, when he steps on the field, there is no one that's touching me. I think Lamar Jackson has it. And I think Stroud has glimpses of it because he is a very confident young man. For me, that's where he can take the next step, is whenever he walks on the field, I am that guy, I'm the mother that is on this, and I'm going to lead my team to victory every single time. To me, that's where he can take the biggest stride.
Yeah, and I think that kind of goes to my first point about the fact that as he gets more comfortable with the offensive playbook and everything with it, that it seems to me, and if you hear some of the sound from him, aside from just that quote too, it seems like his goal is going to be to get to a point where he is like the commander in chief on the field. Like when he takes care of when he takes center for the offense, it's like Peyton Manning, where you don't need an offensive coordinator because he sees everything. He knows what the defense is going to do and how they're lined up, and he knows the play to beat it. And he just instantaneously is going to calculate that kind of stuff. I think that that's what you want your quarterback to aspire to be. I think there's no reason to believe that he can't get there.
Yeah. What do you think he can get better, Brian?
Joel touched on what I was going to say partly there, but I heard, I don't remember exactly where I heard this, but there was a conversation about, and I think it came from Keenum, about Stroud's confidence and I guess the team's willingness to let him make all the line checks, identify the mics, you know, have the ability to audible. Remember during the Kubiak era, like the quarterbacks weren't allowed to audible, basically. They just had to run the play that Kubiak radioed in. So I'd like to see Stroud get to a point where you see him like Peyton, you see him like Drew Brees, come to the line with a couple options, three options, lines. He's out there yelling, identifying the mic. He's changing the offensive line protection. He's making audibles, you know, switching the directions of the run plays, whatever he needs to do. I think that is a step as he gets more confident and he starts to act like that, like, as you talked about, Jeremy, well, the way Mahomes and Lamar portray themselves on the field. I think the team's going to be more and more willing to give him that control, and I think that could unlock another level for him.
Yeah. I wonder how much of that is the offense versus him being a rookie and how much they'd be willing to allow him to do that.
That is the question that needs to be answered because, I mean, it's obviously not the exact same offense, but Kubiak offense, you know, through Shanahan, through now Bobby Slowick, it does come from the same tree. And Kubiak, staunchly, I'm guessing it changed with Peyton Manning. But, you know, up until that point with the Houston Texans, there was a talking point that he did not allow Matt Schaub or whoever the quarterback was to change the play. They had to run what he called.
Yeah.
I think it becomes a bigger issue, too, in terms of how quickly he's able to do those kind of things and has that comfort level and that confidence. Because if everything goes as planned like a year ago, you're probably going to see Slowick get a job next year. And it's going to be an easier transition for whatever they choose to do at offensive coordinator if he has that confidence and that grasp of the playbook to be able to audible and call whatever he sees based on what he sees, call whatever he wants.
And I also think when you listen to that answer from Stroud, that is the first thing you mentioned. I think that's often when you get the most truth from somebody. The more and more of the talk, they've had time to think about it and say what, you know, kind of is the easy answer, the political answer, you know, talk or just be able to say things like, oh, I want to push the ball. Yeah. I want to take care of the ball. That snap thought he has when he's first answered the question is command of the offense. And to me, that's what we're talking about here.
Yeah, I think the command of the offense also goes into the consistency of it because Stroud would have his games where he played well, where he was consistent throughout. But he would have the sporadic game, and we talked about it just a moment ago, where – like, where is the offense in this game? Why are they playing so poorly? And Carolina is, like, really the big one there, I think, especially coming off the bye where, you know, throws for 140 yards. The offense scores 13 points against a bad team. Early in the year, like, I threw out the week one. I even kind of threw out the week two, even though he played well in the week two. Like, these are very early in your NFL career. You're trying to learn. You're trying to adjust, et cetera, et cetera. Played in the Atlanta game, bad in the Carolina game, and the ones that you lost in the Jets game where he was already concussed, but still went 10 for 23 in that game. For him to take that step to be a top three quarterback in the NFL, to be a top five quarterback in the NFL, you can't have the duds that he had in his rookie year. You can't lose to the worst team in the NFL, score 13 points, and throw for 140 yards. So you have to be able, if you're going to be a top three, top five quarterback, and the Houston Texans are going to be Super Bowl contenders, you have to get rid of those duds.
Absolutely. And that's when you look at, when we talk about taking the step to the premier level, when we talk about being the man on the field at all times, it's a high lofty bar that not anybody even has the chance to be considered as a guy that could get there to be in Mahomes' status and where he's at. But you're right, you mentioned some of the other guys. Burrow did it very quickly, and he had that grasp and that confidence to where he had that supreme confidence in himself that he could handle any situation, make the right read, make the right throw on top of it. And that's where I think that's why it's tough to criticize him. The rookie season we saw, we may never see again. But the fact that we know that because of what we saw and because of what we hear and because it seems like the work ethic is there, that is a fair expectation to say not only he's going to get there, maybe not quite to the Mahomes level in terms of overall achievements, but in order to get there too, it's how quickly does he have, do all those kind of things come together for him for the benefit of the team and himself.
713-780-ESPN. What are the most pressing questions post All-Star break for the Houston Astros? 713-780-3776. What do you think they are? It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.